kind of curious whether you've heard about anything exciting in terms of treating COVID. I have heard from a couple other docs in New York in terms of convalescent sera. Any observations or thoughts about that?
Yeah, they're not randomized trials, but we had a very big convalescent plasma program here at Mount Sinai. We solicited these patients who had these very, very high antibody titers. It does seem to work. These patients do seem to recover faster. And they're going from plasma to hyperimmune globulin to, as you know, actual antibodies against some of the surface molecules on coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2. So I think that that type of approach will work. Of course, you know, there's dexamethasone and also remdesivir. There are these interesting side areas that, you know, kind of we hear different stories about. One of them is, in fact, ADT, which I mentioned. We also have some interesting data on whether or not alpha blockers might be protective. This is a collaboration we have with Johns Hopkins, and we're looking in our data set. And maybe there's some suggestion that alpha blockers like tamsulosin may also be protective against severe side effects of COVID-19. But, you know, doing randomized trials in the middle of the pandemic was very, very hard. So we had a COVID-19 research group that I was part of, and we were vetting these studies, but it was just coming fast and furious. You know, everybody wanted to test their drug, and we had a lot of patients, but you couldn't do all these trials on these patients. You know, how do you go consent them? Just consenting them is not easy because people have to go in and out of these rooms, and their patients were sick and so on. So convalescent plasma, those other two drugs I mentioned, and, you know, there may be opportunities now to look at some of these other drugs in randomized trials.
Yeah, my favorite, we had Jeff Sharman from US Oncology talking about BTK inhibitors. They did a trial of acalabrutinib. There's one of ibrutinib and, you know, for their immune effects. And speaking of immunity, we were talking about neutropenia. Do you pay much attention to lymphopenia?
I haven't traditionally. Well, we know that lymphocytes are very important for protecting against viral infections. And traditionally, I really haven't looked much at those. You know, we're worried about bacterial infections, but there could be a correlation with lymphopenia and drugs that deplete lymphocytes, because obviously there are good lymphocytes and there are bad lymphocytes, and there are lymphocytes that will protect you, especially in the setting of these viral infections. So we don't give a lot of lymphopenia-inducing drugs as much as maybe some diseases do, but I think it could be an interesting thing to look at.
It's been really interesting. The Pembro Q6 weeks approval came out in the middle of all this, and I just figured like everybody was going to do it. And actually, it's interesting. A lot of people pushed back a little bit. There's a higher dose. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, I think we were just stayed in the mode of doing what we were doing before. I think that we did adapt the Q4 week nivolumab dosing. Pembro may just have been a poor timing issue. Patients do like to come in every 6 weeks. I just hadn't adapted to it at this point. And, you know, our infusion room was relatively empty. So, you know, from the point of view of having the patients come in and not changing their therapy, we just kept doing what we were doing.
Another issue is who needs to be tested. And of course, I'm sure this would vary based on sort of what's going on in your own geographic area. But you can see there's a lot of difference in how people think it through. I don't know if it is a function of how much of the problem. But for example, patients about to begin systemic therapy, chemo, targeted therapy, patients going for surgery, where there you could really understand the need to test. Radiation therapy. What's been your practice in terms of testing in these situations?
Right. So we are testing every patient before they start their first course of chemotherapy, for example, or any systemic therapy. And then we test them once a month while they're on the therapy. So not everyone does that, as you can see here. But I think for chemotherapy in particular, that that's probably a wise strategy if you have access to the test. I can tell you that at least in New York, currently, the positivity rate's very, very low. And that's, again, the patients who are getting cancer treatments, we're not finding lots of asymptomatic carriers. The asymptomatic carriers are young people who don't get cancer. It's a different population. So our positivity rate for all of these tests in these three groups has been very, very low, under 5%.
Okay, this one. This really surprised me. 1 to 5, how disruptive has the pandemic been on your ability to keep up to date with new cancer advances? And you can see there's a big spectrum, but a lot of people saying that it has affected, including you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, when your mind is on kind of changing the way you live your life and practice, nothing's normal right now. I do think CME, you'd think that if you don't have as many social events to go to, you'd have more time to do CME. But it doesn't really quite work like that. You know, I think people, their minds are kind of, certainly in the midst of the pandemic, we're caught up in a lot of different things. And I can tell you my practice now, Neil, is very, very busy. And as I mentioned, my workflow is very different than it used to be. So, you know, how would I get caught up? ASCO, you know, I went to virtual ASCO, just wasn't the same. Forget how much you absorb by being in a place completely focused on that and not by all the minutiae that comes to you every day. So I do feel like we're missing out and maybe we have to go to a new normal. AACR, I missed a lot of the things at AACR. In some ways, I heard some people tell me, you know, it's more convenient. It's easier. I can just sit in my home. And maybe some people learn that way. But I think there are a lot of people like me where the way in which you learn, the way in which you interact with people, we've lost a lot of those interactions. And I think it will be up to different modes, like Grand Rounds is very different than it used to be, or your CME programs. How do we start to adapt them to make sure that this information is getting out there? Because there are new drugs being approved, and I've been trying to absorb some of these changes, and I'm just going to have to learn how to do it slightly differently, maybe obviously less in-person stuff.
You know, it's interesting, of course, like every group doing education, we had to completely rethink what we were doing, try to see if we could achieve the same objectives. But, you know, as time went on, one of the things I started thinking about was kind of going beyond the data, even beyond treatment decisions, into some kind of relief or healing that people have in a really hard job being a general medical oncologist, just to see really smart people up there on a stage talking about stuff or making rounds with people like that. I just, thinking about it myself, it almost is like scripture or something, you know, it's like some type of process that we go through as physicians that starts when we make rounds that gives us, maybe when we hear answers, when people can connect up, whatever. In a way, you know, we love to play rock music before, you know, our things. I almost kind of look at what we do almost like music, that there's a healing power to hearing the leaders, you know, deal with these issues. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but we've been wondering whether or not we can try to recapture that virtually.
I think you're talking about rituals and around where we find comfort in what we do. We certainly understand what those are in our personal lives. For some people, it's going to church or it's having a 4th of July picnic. And think about how all those things have been disrupted. I canceled all my vacations. What am I going to do with my family? You know, I'm not really sure. Where do we go? What do we do? What's safe? Where can we, you know, eat and travel? So all the things that bring us comfort personally have been disrupted. Professionally, we don't always think about that, right? Because we're doctors. We kind of think, I got to go to work. I'm going to do my thing. And you're 100% right. Nobody's really thought about what we take comfort in. As you were saying it, I really thought about that idea of sitting in a room. People sit in a room, they're having a cup of coffee and they're standing and watching a panel on the podium talk about cancer patients and how best to manage them. We don't have that right now. And this is a, you know, an approximation, but it's not really the same thing. And that whole thing is really a ritual. And what makes it great is that if your mindset is ready to absorb that information, you capture that in a very different way than if you do an online or book learning. It's just not the same. So I think you're right. And I think we'll get back to that. We're oncologists, so we are optimists by our very nature. And I think we will get to that. And I guess the question is, will it be exactly the same when this is all over? Or will there be some hybrid about how we learn? Because even in the midst of this pandemic, as you saw from your slides, so much new information has come out. And it's very hard to keep up. I have tremendous respect for general oncologists to keep up. I can hardly keep up in my own field. And so maybe we do need to kind of capture different ways of learning so that we keep up even in the midst of all this stress society.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special COVID-19 Patterns of Care program.